Hayes, and you're listening to KTSW Santa Marcos.
Coming at you live from the KTSW studios in San Marcos, Texas, this is Bobcat Radio.
I could be very offbeat. I don't have my headphones in, so I'm just kind of it's song over.
Awesome. It's not song quite over yet.
Over. It's not over. There it is. Hit zero. All right, we are good. This is the Friday show. That's how you start it off. Parker A, joined by Reed Graff and Brendan Snow. This is the powerhouse crew. We just decided to stack the roster, sort of like a Golden State.
Like an all-star team.
Like a LeBron's all-star team. I've just now realized that I'm slowly coming to grips. I know we were talking about it earlier. Brendan was like, did you see LeBron's all-star team? It's so much better than Steph Curry's. And I'm like, I don't know about that. I mean, Steph Curry's got James Harden, but no, he's right. They're much better than, I mean, some of the names on there is just ridiculous, man.
I mean,
how you guys doing, man?
I'm good. It's good to be back. But I mean, Stephen's team is just a bunch of shooters. We're gonna be throwing alley-oops to each other, dude. Throwing some big old slam dunks down. We got the good crew here, so
it'd be fun. My first Friday show. I've done the Wednesday show two semesters, the Monday show a semester. Now I'm on for the Friday show. First time, I think it's my first time doing a show with Parker or Reed, besides, you know, working games or that
the midday. Yeah.
So
welcome to the dark
radio
side.
On the Friday show, which is the. I listened to it a lot last semester. You know, it's a pretty laid-back, casual show. Had a lot of fun. Interested to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's gonna be a fun time. I'm hoping it's gonna be a good show. You know, we kind of have a friendly competition with other people on staff, but I mean, it's really not gonna be much of a competition this year. The Friday show is stacked. I kind of want to dive into Texas State basketball coming off a big win, 62-61 against Georgia Southern. Maybe not necessarily the type of game. You want to see them, not necessarily the type of game you want to see them play, but guys, what were your thoughts on the games? And I know we're going to actually get the free throw that Trey Nottingham made. I have it as a soundbite. But what are some thoughts from that game? I know they barely squeaked out a win against Georgia Southern. You can say they barely squeaked out, or you can just be like Al Davis, just win, baby. But what are your guys' thoughts on the game, the outcome, and stuff like that?
I mean, we keep saying, well, they just squeaked out a victory. This is what they do. They win close games. They win games at the end, whether it's by a missed layup from the opposing team, whether it's by making a free throw and then just not allowing the opposing team to score in the 3 seconds that they have. But in any which way you look at it, outside of that rough loss to Louisiana Lafayette, who have to be the favorites to win the Sun Belt as of right now, they've won seven out of their last eight. So whether it was luck, whether it was gritty defense, which we all know that's what they pride themselves on. But the important thing for me is Nigel Pearson looked a lot better in this game than he has recently. 22 points. He shot 40% from the field, 50% from three, made four threes, led the team in rebounds, was back to being the dominant player that we expect him to be. Brendan, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely. Texas State won this game and played this game the way they want to. You go on the road to a top four team in the conference. You know that you're battling, you know, second, third, fourth place for. You go into their house, a team that hadn't lost at home all season long. This is their first home loss of the year. Texas State goes in there, you know, holds them to 61 points, holds them to 2 of 21 on threes. You know, they hold Ike Smith, their second leading scorer. They completely just about shut him down. Secondly, Ike Smith scorches 8 points on 3 of 12 shooting. He came in averaging around, you know, 12, 13 points a game. So they shut him down. They made Tukey Brown really carry that team. And they made a lot of great adjustments down the late in the game to squeak out that last second victory.
I know, guys. We look at this team and we see like they're barely squeaking out wins. We talk about that's kind of how this team's going to go forward. I know it's easy to push the panic button after getting stomped by Louisiana 80-55, but I think we do need to realize that this Louisiana team is probably going to run away with the Sun Belt. I mean, let's just be fair.
They're very good. We were talking before the show about how athletic. They had a guy on their team. He's a transfer from Missouri, which is an SEC school. Every time the ball bounced off the rim, this dude was trying to go have a putback dunk on it. Just a ridiculous athlete. The Sun Belt probably has about 3 to 4 NBA prospects in it altogether, and at least 3 of them play for Louisiana Lafayette. So the Texas State Bobcats right now have to be the second best team in the Sun Belt, right? Like the way they've been playing so well, they've been winning some tough games. But Lafayette is like head and shoulders above us, and that's kind of scary. I don't think how anyone – it's going to take a great game from someone to knock them off.
Yeah, well, the other top four team in the Sun Belt Conference, you know, is Louisiana, Texas State, Georgia Southern, and Georgia State's right there with Texas State and Georgia Southern, and that's who the Bobcats play on Saturday. Tomorrow mm-hmm. is Georgia State, so that'll be a real test to see if Texas State can solidify themselves as the number two team, especially being on the road. And you don't have necessarily, you know, we're hoping for the Bobcats win. I think the Bobcats can win that game, but mm-hmm. if that's just a close game, you know, it's close game late, you lose by a point, you know, the shot doesn't fall, that layup does fall, you still solidified yourself as a legit team at the top end of the Sun Belt Conference, and you know, trying to catch Louisiana, maybe catch them in some bad games later in the season in the tournament, because like you said, they have some real players. They're seniors. A lot of them are older, experienced seniors. Frank Bartley can score. Bryce Washington averages a double double. Jakeenan Gant can score from anywhere. Really, a lot of good players on Louisiana. So Texas State's just got to take care of their business and wait and try to meet them in the championship of the tournament.
I do want to remind people they can call into the show or tweet at us. If they want to tweet at us, they go to KTSW Sports right now. Reed Graff is manning the Twitter at the moment. And if you want to call us, go 512-245-3473. Again, that's 512-245-3473. Anyway, we're going to keep skipping along here. I kind of want to talk about Trey Nottingham, what is kind of happening with him. You know, he hit that final free throw. I'm going to cut to that in just a moment, guys. But just noticing some things, noticing maturity from him coming in from Marlon Davis' injury. I think Trey Nottingham is probably, if you look right now, probably the best pure offensive player on the team. And I don't know, I guess that's up for debate. But
what he showed me the other day was something he hadn't shown me yet. He showed me he's got a clutch gene. I know it's a free throw, but with all the pressure, that's a loud stadium. And he still drills the free throw, gets back on defense, and they make the stop. Trey Nottingham has shown that he can pass the ball. He's shown that he can play defense. He's shown that he has the ability to shoot from anywhere on the court. And now he shows that he can play in the clutch. Are you kidding me? Like, this kid's got it all.
Wait, talking about the clutch, I'm thinking just right before that, Trey Nottingham, we said 12 points. He was 3 of 11 shooting. It was the game was on the line. The ball was in his hands. He didn't, no conscience, didn't think about his shooting woes at all. Like I said, 3 of 7 from the field, 2 of 6 on threes, was 3 of 3 from the line before the last triple. We split him and hit that second one for the lead. But just, Parker said the maturity, that all that goes into it, being aggressive, knowing situation, getting to the basket, drawing to that foul, not worrying at all despite struggling shooting for that game. For a young player like that, it's really nice to have and see someone finally. I'm pretty confident in calling Trey Nottingham the second player right behind Nigel Pearson right now.
Yeah, you have to still lead with Nigel Pearson. Sometimes it seems like Nigel Pearson could be more aggressive. Last night was not the case. Nigel Pearson
did a lot better
last night. So that's how you want to see Nigel playing move forward. But this is the final shot. It's the final free throw of the game for Trey Nottingham. I want you guys to pay attention to how quiet the arena gets once Trey Nottingham hits this shot. Georgia Southern's arena was buzzing before he hit this go-ahead shot, and of course was the last points of the game and carried the Bobcats to victory. So here it is.
To the lead, Nottingham off the shoulder. Spins the basketball again. One dribble. The shot is good.
As they go on, you hear a lot of buzz in the crowd, and then as soon as Brant says it's good, kind of gets quiet again. But what were you saying, Reed?
Parker, we have our first question actually from Twitter. Josh, and correct me if I say your last name wrong. Grothius, his Twitter handle also has University of Central Florida Knights 2017 national champions, so that's respectable. And he asks. Is the new part of Strahan's exterior going to blend in with the old part? This is relevant to basketball. This is where the basketball team plays. Are they doing any upgrades to the halls of Strahan, concessions, etc.? We know that you and I are slated to graduate somewhere May 2019.
Yeah.
Right? We know for a fact that they expect these upgrades to be done by December, right? Or in December of 2018.
Yeah, it's going
to
be in December around there. You know, actually, I think that is a good question for us to answer. On the other side of the break, I know, hey, they're building something over there. Not quite sure if it's going to blend in with the rest of Strand Coliseum, but we can definitely speculate on that coming out of the break, and we definitely will. I appreciate the questions. Just keep keep calling us and keep questioning us on Twitter. That was a good one. Get some fan interaction going. But right now, we have to go to a quick break. But we want to let you guys know we are sponsored by the University Bookstore. It is located on the second floor of the LBJ Student Center. The University Bookstore provides support for Texas State programs, departments, events, and organizations. More info at bookstore.txstate.edu or at 245-2273. We still have Ryan Newman. He's going to call in at 11:30, Texas State Baseball, and we're going to answer some fan questions coming up right here on KTSW San Marcos.
United Way of Hays County is dedicated to keeping a helping hand within reach. Under community leadership and with the help of local agencies and selfless volunteers, United Way of Hays County strives to stabilize, improve, and maintain quality of life for countless people. From offering programs like FamilyWise, a prescription discount card, to partnering with the Greater San Marcos Youth Council, United Way of Hays County is here to assure access to quality education, income, and good health. For more information, visit their website at unitedwayhayesco.org. A message from KTSW, the other side of radio.
Your book, Democracy and Torture, I mean, is it worse? So any human being you might think is entitled to dignity and basic rights, is it worse for a democracy to torture than it is for a tyranny to torture?
You've just heard a piece of Philosophy Talk, the show that explores interesting topics of discussion such as popular culture or our most deeply held beliefs about science, morality, and the human conditions.
You can find more information at philosophytalk.org, and you can tune into Philosophy Talk Mondays at 7 a.m. right here on KTSW.
All right, we are back in the mix, and just to continue on the question, the fan question we got on Twitter about if the advancements in construction will blend in with Strahan Coliseum. Reed, I know you guys got to see it a little bit. I got to see it for a quick moment. It looks fantastic, but you said maybe not blend in very well, but it would still look good.
What I think it's going to do is, so it's going to take the back wall is going to be completely knocked out, and it's going to have a better entranceway. I know they're redoing the locker rooms. I don't know so much about the concession stands or anything like that, because that's kind of on the other side of the gym that's not getting worked on. But from the picture that Brendan has, and he'll put it on our Twitter here in a little bit, it's going to bring a lot more lighting and just a more ambient atmosphere. It's not going to be so dark in there, more open feeling. It looks really good. I'm excited to see what the final product's going to look like.
It's going to make it look like a basketball stadium. Right now, if you drive by Strahan Coliseum, you're not really sure what it is if you don't see the name. There's no true entrance to Strahan Coliseum, no like main entrance to go to for the games here. There's clearly a main area with the name above it, and you can see, oh, this is Strahan Coliseum, this is what I'm looking for, this is where I need to be. It's going to add 68,000 square feet of space. Relocates the band practice field, add updated locker rooms and coaches' offices, add 1,800 seats to the event center, which I believe they're taking out that wall. That's right.
That back wall, they're knocking that wall down.
That wall does not look good.
That'll just be like an entrance into the gym.
So it's going to make it look a lot better. It's going to look like a stadium. It's going to look updated. Pretty big for Texas State Athletics, in my opinion.
I think it's going to be a bonus, I mean, it actually advances with, I think, this basketball program. So I think if you look at the sports that are doing well here at Texas State, you got to go to women's basketball. You got to go to men's basketball, even though they have their ups and downs. For the most part, have been on an upward trend, I would say. And then you look at volleyball as well. So all three of those sports deserve nicer facilities. You look at the stadium, that's a really nice facility in football. Why not upgrade Strahan Coliseum, give it more of a better fan experience for them, and just kind of put some pride where they're playing and stuff. I think it's a good idea. I think it looks good. But that being said, we're moving on to Texas State basketball again. We're talking about Trey Nottingham. Brendan, you had something. We talked about the free throw he hit. Just the fact that this guy comes in the clutch is very surprising to me, the fact that he just stepped up and just knows his role and has actually taken some leadership responsibilities on this team as well. What are you saying about him so far?
Well, looking at his five starts, and this is not including the Troy game, which is almost like a start because he came in 5 minutes to the game, played the whole thing, not including the Troy game. In those five starts, he's averaging 32.2 minutes, 12.8 points, 3.4 assists, and 2.6 rebounds, shooting 44% from the field and 52% on threes. After the ULM game a couple weeks ago on that Thursday post-game conference, Coach Casper said, Trey is playing like an all-conference Sun Belt player. So I went and looked into that. I wanted to see how that stacked up. If those were his season averages, once again, it's a small sample, just five games for now, but we don't know. say he maintained, you know, at about 13 points, 3.5 assists, 3 rebounds a game, he maintains that. Those are his season averages. He would be 5th in the Sun Belt in minutes played, 18th in the Sun Belt in points per game, 7th in assists, 1st in 3-point percentage, and 4th in steals. That's an all-conference player right there. And this is a kid who wasn't getting a lot of play time earlier in the season, and he's just really stepped up and taken advantage of the opportunity given to him.
You know, and he's not exactly a small point guard either. At 6'2", 185, he's a junior college transfer, but he's just taken the San Marcos world community by storm. And, you know, nothing against Marlon Davis. Marlon Davis was a very good distributor of the ball. He was very good at managing the game.
I was
going to
say, Marlon Davis was a great game
manager. He was a good game manager.
Good defender.
Trey is such a better scorer. He's such a fluid athlete. He brings something to the game that, I mean, it's unfortunate as an injury was, he brings something to the game that Marlon Davis just couldn't. And Trey Nottingham can shoot it from three. He can drive to the basket. He's shown that he can distribute the ball. But one of the things that's impressed me the most by him, he doesn't turn over the ball much. And that's so important for a point guard, is you just limit the turnovers, get the ball to your scorers. And I think you've seen the team play better because of it. The only game he's really struggled, he didn't shoot well against Georgia Southern, but he did shoot well enough, still scored 12 points. The only game he really struggled in is Louisiana Lafayette. Of course, he's not the only player that struggled in that game. So Trey has definitely taken the reins of that job, and I think he'll have the job the rest of this season and all of next season.
And I've said it a couple of times now. If you watch on the court, watching the game, just watch Trey. He has a little bit of a swag to the team. He has some confidence in him. He plays, you know, with, I don't say with style, but he just adds
with swag.
Something. He just swag and adds more to the team. Makes the team, you know, feel more confident, look better. Just looks better out there. Looks more like a complete basketball player. And just you can't talk enough about what he's done going 4-1 so far as a starter, with the only loss being to the best team in the conference.
Yeah, nothing to discredit Marlon Davis, but Trey Nottingham's just been fantastic.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's fair for us to say the team just has a spark when Trey Nottingham's out there. I mean, offensively, a guy that can shoot three-pointers like that and help spread the ball around, when we know this offense is, let's just say, they're more of a defensive team. Mm-hmm. So when you have a guy out there that can shoot the three along with, you know, you have guys that can shoot the three, but not as consistently and not as a guy that you want to go to and say, here, you take the final shot. I mean, we thought maybe it was Nigel Pearson. Sometimes it is. We thought maybe Alex Peacock, but Alex Peacock has always, to me, struck me as a defensive first guy. Even when he had that stretch where he was just putting up crazy numbers.
Like the 21-9-9 game.
Yeah, the almost triple-double game. I was surprised because he didn't really strike me as a... He struck me as a guy that could shoot the ball when he had to, but he struck me maybe as a team player and a leader on the defensive end. And then you have Nigel Pearson, who really come off a season where it was just a great freshman season up there with KGT and just leading the team. And then he comes back, and now I think I don't know if it's the pressure. I just feel like maybe he hasn't really progressed from last season as much as we thought he should. And so you look at it, well, then who's going to step up? Well, looking like right now, it's Trey Nottingham. Let's see if he can keep it up for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and we're talking about the players a lot. Let's give a lot of credit to the coaches that went.
Yeah.
Danny Casper has done a phenomenal job coming off a tough loss Saturday to have his team rebound like this, get this win. And there was a crucial play I saw right at the very end by Casper. It was Georgia State's second-to-last possession, I believe, is when the game was tied. And Georgia Southern was inbounding the ball. They threw it into Tukey Brown at half court, clock running down. He's going to run some clock a little bit. Then Tech State threw a trap at him. Get the ball out of the best player's hands. Tukey Brown averages 18 points per game. I would also trap him and get the ball out of his hands. And they forced it to Jake Allsmiller, who was 0-for-3 in the game before that, ended up missing that open three to go 0-for-4 and did not score in that game. Yes, he's Jake Allsmiller is second in the Sun Belt Conference this year in threes made, but you got to know the time and situation. Know he hasn't shot well and forced someone else to beat you. It's a great job forcing the ball out of, you know, Tukey Brown, who already had 24 points in that game. Get the ball, make someone else beat you, and I thought it was a great coaching move forcing that trap.
Yeah, I think coaching is something we don't really talk about as much, and we don't realize the genius of Coach Danny Casper and his staff. A lot of the times you go into a press conference to Danny Casper and you really don't know what's going to happen, but he's a very, very good coach and does a great job with these guys. So moving on, looking forward to maybe some Texas State women's basketball. I know the men pick up. They'll play Georgia State, and then that's going to be a tough one. But moving on to Texas State women's basketball, they handled business against Georgia Southern. And for me, it's been an honor just watching them, calling some games with Brant Freeman. They are a great bunch of athletes there, and they won that game 81-56. They crushed the Eagles on the road, and I mean, that was just a great performance. And really, I want to actually go to Coach Zinere Antoine, because she talks about the bench play and other players stepping up, and just how good it feels to blow a team out like this in conference. You kind of get to rest your starters a little bit, and for a team that has a really tight rotation like they have, this was a very good game for them.
You know, that's exactly what I appreciate, is more I had to get pretty fiery and get after them at the halftime. They came out and they responded with an exclamation mark. But only allowing 7 points was what we talked about, I think that's what you want. You need an immediate response. You need to have a great, what you call a timeout response, and that's what we had. We had a great timeout response, which then allowed us to rest a lot of our kids that play quite a few minutes for us. And anytime, you know, you don't have Tasha Levitt or Taylor Deere leading, and you got Brooke Holly leading in the scoring category, and we have multiple players in double digits, and we're able to play almost the entire bench, that's quite a welcome feeling.
Well, she said that's quite a welcome feeling, having players step up, and mainly she was talking about Brooke Holly, who really has been the third go-to player for this team. You look at Toshua Levitt, Taylor Deere, you expect those players to do very, very well. But going into the game yesterday, it was really more of a team effort, and it was just an all-around beatdown. Guys, did you notice anything from just watching? I know if you kept up with it, you know it was just one of those games. I mean, the girls put up 81 points. That's just incredible.
We talk about the men's team a lot, a team that is a defensive, barely, struggle these games out. The women's team straight up gets buckets.
Yeah.
And there's so many different players on the team that are either in the starting lineup, that are on the bench. You look at Brooke Holly. She's a starter, but she's not. You talk about the scores of the team. You think Taylor Deere. You think Erica May. Brooke Holly is a superstar in her own right. She can do it. She can do everything on a basketball court. She can shoot. She can drive. But then you just keep looking. You go into the bench. It's just such a deep team that can score from any angle at any moment.
A lot of people can score. And I was just about to say, this is the sixth time this season this team has scored at least 80 points. That's impressive. I know the magic number Brant was saying is if this team scores 70, they have a good shot of winning. Well, if they score 80, then I guess I want to say they're probably unstoppable.
Just lock it in.
Just
right?
Lock it in. Check it off. Brendan, what have you noticed from this women's team so far? I know you haven't been able to watch them too closely, but you got to love what you're seeing.
Yeah, especially when you see Tasha Levitt not have her greatest game, just 3 of 8 from the field, 3 of 7 on threes, 12 points. But Tasha Levitt finishes your fourth leading scorer, and you still win by 20-plus. That's big time, because sometimes it feels like you need Tasha and Taylor Deere to be that's the way you think. You think you need Tasha and Taylor Deere to be on fire and be, 15 to 20 points each to win this game. Taylor Deere normally puts up a triple-double, 13 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds. As I said, Tasha with just 12, but then Tierra Pitt stepped in with 13, and the 26 from Brooke Holly.
Right, that's her best game of the season.
And as much as a good game this was for the Bobcats, before we jump on a little too hard, Georgia Southern is 0-8 in conference and 3-16 on the season in that women's side. So they were not playing a great opponent. Yes, it's still a blowout on the road against a conference foe. Don't take things away from that. But it was a good bounce-back game after losing Saturday to Louisiana. And I'd like to see this team go a little bit on a run. They haven't got a lot of rhythm lately in their wins and losses. And all 9 conference games, it's gone win, loss, win, 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 loss, win, loss, win. So you'd like to see them get a winning streak going here, going against some lower-end teams in Georgia Southern, Georgia State, Coastal Carolina, Appalachian State, teams that don't blow up, that don't show up really high in the standings. So we're going to see them win a couple in a row and try to get some momentum going into the end of the season.
You know, one of the questions on our Facebook right now is, who can stop them? And looking at the Sun Belt standings, Texas State currently is third in the conference. South Alabama is above them, 7-1, and then Little Rock is undefeated in conference, 8-0. So those are probably your two biggest opponents going into the rest of the season.
Yeah.
But you have to think offense.
And don't forget, I mean, they just came. They before this game, they came off a loss to Louisiana Lafayette, a team that did stop them there.
That is currently fifth.
They're down there fifth. So teams can definitely stop them if they lock in on defense and prevent them from shooting three pointers. But that being said, it's a lot harder than it looks because Tasha Leavitt, I'm telling you, she pulls up from almost half
court. She can score whenever she wants. Yeah. And that's kind of what I was getting at is you have to think with this offense, we can beat anybody.
Oh, yeah. We can come. If we're hot, they're going
to be. Exactly. So, Little Rock's 8-0 and 11-8 in the season. But you still have to give Texas State a shot against anybody. They have such a good offense, and they have some defensive players. Like, man, I love Massaqua coming off the bench. She's so much fun to watch play. She's not a great scorer, but she just plays with so much grit, and she's such a good defensive presence. This is a deep team that has a lot of players that can make things happen, and it'll be interesting to see how they play coming into the rest of the season, getting towards the tournament.
And we got a transition now, but of course they do take on Georgia State, which is a team that's 1-7 in conference, 5-14. So this Georgia road trip, the Bobcats should just wipe the floor with. They already did it with Georgia Southern. They should do it again with Georgia State, knock on wood. But that being said, they play, I believe that game starts at 11 a.m. Saturday, and Riley Chestnut will be the producer for that one. Brant Freeman will be on the call. And we're going to switch to Texas State baseball because it's right around the corner. The first pitch luncheon is January 30th, which is next Tuesday. Reed, a couple guys will be at that, getting some audio, getting some interviews. That being said, Reed, I know you're very excited about baseball season starting up.
I think it's going to be a fun team. They didn't have the best of seasons last year, finishing 29-30. But I just recently did a Texas State baseball preview article coming out on the blog here in the next few hours or so. And as I was doing my research for the team, pitching was a big struggle for them last year. They finished second to last in the Sun Belt last year in ERA, which means they had the second highest earned run average, which isn't good. But as I went through the offense, this offense is going to be so much fun to watch. It's so deep. They have literally the hitters from like 1-7, even 1-9 in the lineup can do a lot of damage. And I think the pitching is going to improve. I think Nicholas Fraze is due for a big year on the mound. It's just going to be a really fun baseball team, really fun baseball season. I'm really excited.
Yeah, I really like the promising of how many players are returning from last year to this year, because they weren't terrible last year. They had a solid season. They can really build off of that this upcoming season. And most of it, you know, it was young pitching. They had a lot of freshmen, sophomores pitching last year. And now, you know, you have more experienced guys. You're going to have Nicholas Fraze going as one of your probably your number one starter. You have Cam Baird, who got a lot of pitched a lot last year. You have a lot of guys in that bullpen who got a lot of action and got to pitch often. Connor Reich got in, it seemed like, almost every game. Brendan Terrio got to pitch a lot. So you get a lot of returning pitchers, some experienced players. Brandon Lewis, also, don't forget him. He pitched a lot last year. Anthony Pagano. I just keep seeing the same names I saw last year on this roster.
Yeah,
a lot of returners.
To try to make some noise in Sun Belt.
It still concerns me, though, because a lot of the guys that are returning didn't have great years, and they're coming into their third year here, and they haven't exactly had great seasons. I mean, outside of Brayden Terrio and Anthony Pagano in the bullpen, I don't trust any of those arms. They're all talented guys who have college experience, but the pitching really concerns me. I still think they can make up for it, though. They have such they have some really good arms. I think, like I said, Nicholas Fraze is just gonna. I think he's gonna have a great year. I'm a baseball scout, and I'm high on Nicholas Fraze. I want to see how hard he throws. I don't know how hard he throws, but from what I've seen from him, he's 6'4", has the ability to do anything. Led the team in innings last season as a freshman. Are you kidding me? This dude's gonna be an ace, and we just need Cam Baird, yeah, Connor Reich, and the other guys to pick up the slack.
Pitchers are just, I mean, you know how it is, guys. I mean, pitchers are weird. They can have a really bad year one year and then all of a sudden be like, a Cy Young candidate or a World Series savior. I was thinking of the Astros, Charlie Morton. He came out of nowhere last year, starts pitching for the Astros, and all of a sudden he's a very key piece for a World Series team. So I think any of these guys can step up and answer the call. And I know Ryan Newman was kind of plagued with injury last year, guys. What do you expect from him kind of coming back? Do you think it's very important that he gets off to a hot start and leads this team offensively? Or do you think maybe he'll have some help? I think he has to have a pivotal role. With the absence of Teddy Hoffman, I think Ryan Newman has to be the power guy for our team.
He needs to be the power guy. But the great thing about our offense is it doesn't live or die with him. As you go through the lineup, you have to assume Derek Scheibel is going to lead off. Hit 7 home runs last year, .296. Guy who's a very good center fielder, too. You, Brendan, you really like him in center field. Talented guy. And then at the number two spot, of course, Jonathan Ortega, the best player on the team, can literally do everything on a baseball field. And then Ryan Newman's going to be the power source. He's got to be the power source. That's what they need him for. But at the same time, they don't absolutely need him. Like, he's not the only source of offense, you know, and that's what makes this team so deadly offensively.
Yeah, this team's extremely deep. They got a lot of different guys that can play or battle, you know, hit pretty much anywhere in the lineup. I expect Newman, he battled a lot of pretty much 3 and 4 last year, sometimes in the 5 hole. So I expect him to be in the middle of that lineup, looking to drive in Derek Scheibel and Ortega, because once Scheibel gets on base, he's able to get over, he's able to get over to second and bang right there. You have a good opportunity to get some early runs early in games. So Texas State's going to need to look to score early and take advantage of those opportunities.
And we actually have Ryan Newman on the line. We'll bring him up right after this commercial break. But actually, Reed, I know I didn't ever say this, but do you think you may have the weather available? I know it is it's kind of chilly out there, but it's going to be kind of a good weekend. I was thinking highs in the 70s. It may actually be like a pleasant weekend before. I don't know if it's going to dip back into being cold again, but I know a lot of people were miserable these past few weeks.
I do know there's a chance of rain the next 2 days. It's currently loading, so I can't tell you the exact weather. I'll get that to you when we get back from the break.
We'll get that going. We'll have Ryan Newman on the line right after this. You're listening to KTSW San Marcos.
Support for KTSW comes from Buzzmo Frontier Diner, presenting Curtis Clogston and friends Bluegrass Night every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Buzzmo Frontier Diner, 194 South Guadalupe Street, and on Facebook and Twitter at Buzzmo San Marcos.
And now I'm going to run my sprinklers, washing machine, and sinks while taking a shower.
Not so fast.
KTSW Water Gal.
That'll teach you to conserve water.
Foiled again.
Hey, San Marcans, only bad guys waste water. Be a hero for the planet like I am and take shorter showers, fix water leaks, and visit the City of San Marcos website for water conservation tips. Our planet, our responsibility. A message from KTSW, the other side of radio.
Full score, and over 3,000 episodes later, 60 Second Civics is still providing listeners with a convenient way to learn about our nation and government. 60 Second Civics examines the people and ideas that serve as the basis of our country's governments and how they relate to today's headlines. Created by the Center for Civic Education, you can find more information on their website at civiced.org. 60 Second Civics airs from Monday to Friday at 5 p.m. right here on KTSW.
All right, we have Ryan Newman on the line with us from Texas State Baseball, the hard-hitting first baseman and designated hitter. How you doing, Ryan?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
Oh, doing great. I'm glad you took the time to call us. I know you are ready for the season to get started. What is practice looking like for you guys right now at the moment? What are you guys working on kind of before the season gets started up?
Well, today is actually our first day. We get to go team practice. We got a couple inner squads going through the weekend, and we're just working out, working out the team, working and meshing together, just learning the offense, learning pickoffs, and stuff like that.
Ryan, Reed Graff here. You just mentioned the season just is starting kicking the gear, but obviously you had all off season to get ready for the season. What was your biggest focus going into this off season?
I'd say our biggest focus as a team is just staying focused on us, you know, not get distracted about other teams in our conference, other teams we play in our schedule, just taking it one game at a time and just trying to win as many games as possible.
Ryan, Brendan Snow, talk about, you know, we were just talking about you were kind of in that middle of the lineup, 3, 4, 5 guy. What kind of role do you see yourself having with the team this year, and either on the field or off the field?
I see this is about the same as the past 2 years. Probably be in there 3, 4, 5, and going to try to be one of our power guys to drive and run to the middle of the lineup.
That's going to be good. I think you definitely fit the bill. I know I actually called the Coastal Carolina walk-off you hit. Of course, I was with Brant Freeman. He called it, but I was in the booth with him. But, as soon as you hit that shot, the place went nuts. I mean, you guys had some really intense competitive games last year. How fun was it for you to just be able to hit the walk-off against the defending national champs? That's probably a feeling you only get to dream of.
Oh, yes, for sure. It's something you dream of. And, it was actually my first walk-off home run in my career. And, I mean, it was everything you'd think. I mean, it's the best feeling in the world.
All right, Ryan, you're a big part of that 2015 recruiting class that's really changed the baseball culture here. I mean, y'all have done some great things in y'all's time here. I mean, yourself, Jonathan Ortega, and a couple other guys. At what point did you guys realize that this is a pretty special group that can make things happen?
Well, you know, me, J.O., Jake Almendarez, and Anthony Pagano all played together in high school and summer teams, and we all got the opportunity to play here. We took it, and we just knew what we could do, and we were trying to change the way Texas baseball is and get it back to what it was.
Ryan, you guys have a lot of players returning from last year to this year. How's that played in the chemistry, and what's the sense for the team going into the season?
It's been really good. You know, we have pretty much everybody back besides Teddy, and, you know, the team chemistry is really good, and it's been good for us at practice just to focus on, like, details of the game and not trying to learn new stuff since everybody knows what they're doing.
All right, Ryan, I was going to ask you kind of about, honestly, I was just going to say, Ryan, I know this team has some pitchers that, you know, the pitching has kind of been questionable. But I was just going to say, if you had to go up against, or if there was one pitcher on this team that you would not want to go up against in a crucial situation, who would it be, coming from a hitter standpoint?
Coming from me, being a lefty, I probably wouldn't want to go against Brandon Lewis or Wesley Engel. I mean, their stuff's looked real lights out this fall, and I'm really excited to see what they do for us in the spring.
Okay, Ryan, every hitter, when they go to the plate, they either go with a different approach or they have a little thing that they do, a little ritual. Do you have any specific rituals when you go to the plate? And what is your approach when you go to the plate? What are you looking for?
As a ritual, I never thought I did, but all my teammates say I, like, pull up my pants when I go there. But
I might keep an eye out for that this season.
Approach... My coach will switch from a bat to a bat, just go up to the first AB, just feeling out what the pitcher's trying to do to me, and just knowing a scouting report. But usually I'll sit on a middle away pitch and just look for something down the middle and try to get a good swing off.
Well, I was just going to say, I have to get this one more question in because, of course, as an Astros fan, I'm a huge, you know, obviously I enjoyed watching the playoffs this last year. I just wanted to ask you, did you kind of enjoy watching these playoffs, and what's probably your number one MLB team if you had one, and if you have a favorite player, we'd love to hear that too.
I'm Astros fan all the way. I'm
nice.
From Houston. I actually went to Game 5, and it was one of the best experiences ever. And
Would you say that's probably the best game of all time?
I would think so.
Yeah, I can agree with my guy.
The atmosphere was crazy.
Awesome, man.
It was my favorite player. I like Jose Altuve.
Heck yeah.
Because he's awesome. And if I give you a little throwback, I like Lance Burtman's, like,
oh, heck
my
yeah.
all-time favorite growing up, watching Astros, so, yeah.
Man, those Killer Bees were something special, but...
Is Lance Berkman a Hall of Famer? What do you think?
I think he should be. I mean, I think his numbers are there, and just what he... I mean, to me, I probably have a little biased opinion, but, yeah, I think he should be.
I think he should, too. I know there was some Astros that missed the Hall of Fame this year, Billy Wagner, Brad Lidge. I don't even know if he went with the Astros. But, you know, for sure, I think you look at Berkman for how long he was with us and what all he's done, and probably one of the better switch-hitting power hitters of all time, so I agree with that. But I just wanted to give you one last shout-out, one chance to shout-out to Bobcat Nation before you go. So if there's anything you'd like to say to the fans listening at home, here's your chance.
Yeah, I just wanted to say to y'all, past 2 years, y'all been awesome coming out and supporting us, and we really need y'all this year. Come out and support us opening day, February 16th, Oklahoma State. We need all y'all out there.
All right, Ryan, good luck to this season, and thanks for calling.
All right, thank you.
Of course, that was Ryan Newman. At first, the interview started off a little rocky, but when we got talking about the Astros, I thought he started to lighten up, and then...
I think he's my new favorite player.
I think when he started bragging on the Astros, I think we got a little personal side of him. I liked it. I know Brendan's over there
Rangers
shaking his head.
I feel bad for him, but...
I want to address something about the state of radio and why people think it gets a negative connotation for a bit. Can I go off on a little bit?
Parker, I've been waiting for you to rant all offseason.
I think people in particular that listen to the show and think, oh, radio has got to be all fighting, all disagreeing. No, I think a good show is standing up for what you believe in and saying what's on your heart. You don't always have to forcibly disagree. We see it all the time on Undisputed and First Take and things like that where they're debate shows. And so people take these outrageous positions, and it doesn't make any sense, and it's not like your heartfelt argument. If we were defending something that was very controversial to us and we each were just stone set in our beliefs, then it would be different. It would make for good radio. But if you force an argument, I don't think it makes a good radio show. I'm sorry. It just doesn't. It's fake.
This isn't First Take. Like, I'm not Skip Bayless just picking up a random point to argue it just for the sake of arguing it. But, I mean, I feel like we've talked about some good topics today. And there's no need to argue about it, especially Trey Nottingham's had such a good season. What's there to disagree on?
But I will say this, of course, Texas State.
Any in particular names you have there, Parker, or just is this just an in general thing?
Oh well, you know, I'm not gonna be a guy that goes out and points at names like, you know, like say Andrew Zimmel, for example. I would never point out a name like that. But
like Andrew Zimmel?
Yeah, I would never actually point out a name. But I mean, yeah, so there's guys like that out there. Like but you know, it's not really about names, Brendan, it's more just how I believe and how I believe a proper radio show should be done. It's not just about hot takes and, you know, all the fancy glitz and glamour. It's about a good show, content, and not babbling like I am now. But I want to say one thing, though. I mean, obviously, I liked Ryan Newman, what he had to say about the pitchers that kind of gave him trouble. Reed, I know you kind of perked up a little bit when he was talking about some pitchers that gave him trouble. I think he may have mentioned Wes Engel, and I think he may have said Lewis too, but those names surprise you coming from? He's saying those guys got a lot better this offseason. Does that kind of surprise you?
Brandon Lewis did, and I've liked Brandon Lewis since he first got here. He's got a good build, he's got a good stuff. I think he just had a rough season last year, so he's going to be a fun guy to follow. Wes Engel kind of surprised me. Wes Engel, I mean, he's a solid pitcher, but I didn't think he had outstanding stuff. But, I mean, if a guy who's facing him and sees him every day says, yeah, this dude has got some shiftiness going on, I mean, you can't dispute that. So maybe we can anytime you have two quality left-handed starters on a team at any level, that's going to be fun to watch. And maybe Brandon Lewis and Wes Engel are some breakout candidates this year. You heard it here first. Ryan Newman says Brandon Lewis and Wes Engel are devastating lefties, and that'll be fun to watch.
That's what I like. Looking up and down this roster, you see a lot of discrepancy in lefties and righties. You have plenty of options on both sides, hitting and pitching. It's a very versatile team that can do, that can go either way. One guy I kind of wanted to highlight, the transfer from West Virginia, Seth Jordan. He's a left-handed pitcher, 6'2", 195, from Flower Mound, Texas, but went to West Virginia. Redshirted his junior year last year, so he should be eligible this season. Mm-hmm. I don't believe he had to miss 2 years in a row. So it would be interesting to have a, you know, anytime you get a Big 12 name like that in Seth Jordan, especially when you have games against other Big 12 schools. You're going against Oklahoma State to open the season. You get UT. You get Baylor. So you get some familiarity to help out.
I know, Reed, a guy that you've always liked, and we didn't really get to hit on the absence of Teddy Hoffman and what that means, but I think Ryan Newman kind of said it himself. Like, it seemed like from the interview, Ryan Newman basically took full responsibility for being the power guy and being the guy that hits in home runs. I think maybe Coach Ty Harrington pulled him aside and has told him that and just said, hey, we need you to produce runs. And this team's going to find a way to get hits and get on base, but it's always good to have that one or two guys that you can point to and say, hey, you're going to clean the bases up for us. And another guy that you like personally is Jalen Hubbard. You said, you know, defensively, I noticed, I mean, he made some crazy plays at third base, but maybe offensively he can get going too. What are you thinking from Jalen Hubbard this season? You expecting big things? I mean, I think he's...
I like him a lot.
I think he's going to do good.
As a baseball scout personally, I'm high on Jalen Hubbard. He's great athleticism. He's got a good frame. The one thing he's hit for a lot of contact, a lot of high average. He's hit a lot of doubles. He's got some solid skills. What he hasn't shown me is power, and I think this is the year we see it. It's his junior season. I expect 5 to 10 home runs from this kid. He's going to lock down the corner spot, and that gives us such a good infield. You look at first base, Ryan Newman, second base, and shortstop, you got the unstoppable. We haven't even talked about Luke Shirley today. And that dude is the, you know, the Energizer Bunny for this team. So I really like Jalen Hubbard. I think he's going to have a fun year. Man, I can't tell y'all how much fun this baseball team is going to be to follow.
And also, talking about the infield, the most overlooked position pretty much all of baseball, the catcher spot. They have two solid catchers in Jared Huber and Felipe Rodriguez. There was a stretch last year where Jared Huber had to miss some time with illness and injury. Felipe Rodriguez took over and had some really solid games. Mm-hmm. So they have depth at the catcher position because that's a position you have to switch out, you know, often day to day because how tiring that playing that spot is. So they have the depth on the infield. They have a great starting unit around the corners from the first to third.
Mm-hmm.
They have the outfield set. It's going to be an exciting season.
I think it is, and I think pitching be hit and miss, but with the offense and the position players you put around the pitching staff, that has to say a lot. In Texas State, I mean, that lineup right there may be partial because we watched them all last season and we've been here for a while, but I think this is a really good, as of right now, yeah. I think this team is really good. Moving forward, now we're going to talk a little bit of pro talk to end, kind of swing out the rest of the show, and we might going to end a little bit of a segment. We're going to start a little segment called Final Thoughts later on, just kind of like the last little bit of information, but we might just talk about pro talk. We'll see how it goes. If we're caught up in pro talk, we won't be doing that. But that being said, we're going to the All-Star. I want to actually look at the NBA All-Star rosters real quick because I know they pick some teams out. And I kind of want to look at that. I know we were kind of talking about Team LeBron versus Team Steph. Right now, you look at the Team LeBron roster. He has Boogie Cousins, Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and, of course, himself, LeBron. And then he has LaMarcus Aldridge, Bradley Beal, Kevin Love, Victor Oladipo, Kristaps Porzingis, John Wall, and Russell Westbrook. So, for me right there, guys, I mean, that's pretty tough. And then we look at Steph Curry as well. I mean, I like Team Curry as well too. Giannis Antetokounmpo, of course Stephen Curry, DeMar DeRozan, Joel Embiid, James Harden, Jimmy Butler, Draymond Green, Al Horford, Damian Lillard, Kyle Lowry, Klay Thompson, and Karl Anthony Towns. I think Steph wanted to get all four Warriors on his team, but LeBron James said no. I'm going to take KD. That being said, I know I'm switched back and forth now, and I'm not just doing this because I'm paranoid about arguing now. But I will say this: I think I'm back on Team Steph. I think I like Team Steph. I think I like 3-point shooting. I know Brendan, you said you were kind of Team LeBron before this, but I'm kind of liking how Steph and his team is lined up as far as just, you know, go out there, shoot threes, have fun with it. We know the All-Star game hasn't really been intense except for like the last 4 or 5 minutes of the game. But LeBron says he wants to amp up the intensity. So could you see some friction here if LeBron's team is very fired up and Curry's team is probably not as fired up? Do you see maybe like a, I don't know, this game could get very personal, very bad, very quick, I think.
Well, what I can see is LeBron's team has the two best players in the NBA, LeBron and Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
So
can't argue that.
That one definitely stuck out to me. You might be able to say the Warriors have maybe the two best shooters in the game in Steph Curry and James Harden.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but something we're not talking about enough is Russell Westbrook's on their bench. Russell Westbrook won MVP last year, averaging a triple-double. And now he gets to play on the same team as LeBron James, Kevin Durant, you know, Anthony Davis, and DeMarcus Cousins.
I mean,
I think when he comes in the game,
it is a big team.
He can cause some problems for the other, not trying to knock them much, but for Steph Curry's backup point guards of Kyle Lowry, Damian Lillard. I love Damian Lillard. Kyle Lowry's a solid point guard, but the edge goes to Russell Westbrook in both of those.
The bench team. I know, Reed, do you have anything to say about these two teams? Because, I mean, it looks pretty one-sided, but I think as long as it's how it was used to be, how the All-Star game has always been played, I think Steph Curry's team still has the advantage. But I think if they start to spice it up, get a little more energetic, and maybe actually play some defense and compete a little bit, I think LeBron's team has a shot because this might be LeBron James' NBA championship right here. I don't think the Cavs are winning the East, by the way. I don't know if I've said this on public record, but the Cavs are not winning the Eastern Conference, so this might be all LeBron James has. So good for LeBron. He won the draft. Yippee. I'm happy for him, but, you know, that's it for him. He's not going to have any more fun in the playoffs this year. His time is up. All right, Reed,
you done ranting?
I didn't know if you wanted to start on that yet.
Okay. Just looking at the starters alone, I don't know. I know y'all both play NBA 2K, right? You ever done the game mode NBA Blacktop where you can do 5v5, you pick five players?
Yes, I always love that mode.
Both these starting lineups look like you and I fired up NBA 2K, did Blacktop, and picked a team.
Both are going to be stacked.
And they just that's exactly what they look like, and it's hilarious. As far as who I think is going to win the game, You have to realize, though, they're not going to take this game super seriously. It's still an all-star game.
Unless they do.
It's going to be 150 to 138 or something like that. It's going to be a high-scoring game. There's very rarely any defense. Y'all guys are forgetting how good the Greek Freak is for the Steph Curry team. This kid is a freak. He is a freak.
He's a
Greek
freak.
Many different things on the basketball court. They also have Damian Lillard, Jimmy Butler. Draymond Green is another great athlete. You can't really looking at the two rosters, it's hard to just say this one's better than this one. I mean, you can't argue that LeBron's team has the two best players in the NBA.
In a traditional setting, I would probably say LeBron James' team is better. But I would also say, dang, I mean, look at the young talent the other team has. So I don't know. It's a toss-up. I'm going with Team Steph. We'll see the results of that whenever it does happen. I know it's coming up pretty soon, but we have to go to a commercial break and then round things out the final 10 minutes. We got some Astros that were snubbed from the All-Star team. We got Tim Duncan in the news as well coming up. Right now, you're listening to Bobcat Radio, but it is sponsored by the University Bookstore, located on the second floor of the LBJ Student Center. The University Bookstore provides support for Texas State programs, departments, events, and organizations. More info at bookstore.txstate.edu or at 245-2273. Right now, we have some interesting just news I just flashed out to you guys that you may not know. I just said some random names, and you guys are going to have to stay tuned to figure it out. You're listening to Bobcat Radio on KTSW, San Marcos.
Tuesday, 10 a.m., and I'm stuck in my dorm. This time of the week, I'd pick up the latest issue of the University Star on campus. Even around San Marcos, the paper with breakfast, I'd be starved for a fresh scoop of local and Texas State news. Fear of missing out on the hottest word clings to me. Then, light. UStar's online at universitystar.com, and they have a weekly newsletter, Instant Journalism. So long, fear of missing out, this NOAA has news. A message from KTSW, the other side of radio.
Do you hear that? It's the pulse of the planet. It's sound portraits from the natural world. It's discussions and interviews about nature and science. And it's only on Pulse of the Planet here on KTSW. Hosted by Jim Metzner, it's your only radio source for surprising facts and fascinating stories about Mother Earth. Tune into Pulse of the Planet every weekday at 2 p.m. here on KTSW.
All right, the final thoughts. When I was saying all-star team, I meant Hall of Fame. Astros got snubbed from the Hall of Fame, but I wouldn't even say snubbed, in my opinion. It was Brad Lidge, Billy Wagner, I think Jeff Kent, who wasn't even an Astro that long.
They were just on the ballot.
And they were just on the ballot. I wouldn't say snub, but I just wanted to get Reed's opinion on it because he is an Astros guy. It's the first time I got to talk to him about it because he joked about Carlos Lee not being in. But
Carlos
Lee's
the Hall
of Famer.
I know
you were being sarcastic.
And I am. Definitely not sarcastic and furious about
it. The only attachment I have to Carlos Lee is the fact that he's fat and he played the outfield. You know that reminded me of me when I was fat and played the outfield in Little League. So, yes, I like Carlos Lee. Yeah, he can hit a tad better than me. Okay, I get it. But
I mean, he probably hit, 300 career home runs?
I mean, solid.
I have a little Carlos Lee figure. He's wearing a sombrero and riding a horse. He's in his old Astros uniform. I've always been a Carlos Lee fan.
I hate him, yeah.
Getting back to the question, I mean, the only guy who, had he been inducted, would have worn an Astros hat probably would have been Billy Wagner.
Yeah.
Because Brad Lidge was only there.
He would have been a Philly. He would have gone with the Phillies.
Yeah. I mean, Brad Lidge was only in. Both those guys were only the Astros closer for a few seasons.
Yeah. Brad ended up winning. He won a championship with Philadelphia. So, I mean, he would obviously pick them, I would think.
The next Houston Astro to get inducted to the Hall of Fame is going to be Jose Altuve.
I was just going to segue.
It's not going to be Lance Berkman.
We have a few future Hall of Famers on our team right now.
Yeah.
I
mean, it's not going to be Lance Berkman. Roger Clemens is not going to wear an Astros hat. Randy Johnson didn't, and I think, how long was Roger Clemens in Houston? 3 years? 2 years? Not very long. Nowhere near long enough to warrant wearing the Astros logo. I don't know. Neither of those guys, had they gotten inducted, Billy Wagner or Brad Lidge, would have worn an Astros hat. I would have been very surprised if they had.
Yeah, so Billy Wagner would be wearing a Mets hat, if anything.
More than likely.
Oh, yeah.
But I think Lance Berkman should be in just for name. Big Puma.
Big Puma.
I think warrants Hall of Fame.
He warrants it.
He got the all-star name. He's got the Hall of Fame
there
name.
There are definitely guys in the Hall of Fame less deserving than Lance Berkman. So,
But baseball is a really hard Hall of Fame to get into.
Yeah, that is with baseball. They don't just hand it off to anybody. You look at the NBA Hall of Fame, anybody can get in. I could probably get in if I just dribbled a couple times and, you know. But, Anyway, you know, you look at...
You are a physical freak, Parker.
I am. People don't know how big I am. Hope Facebook Live isn't pointing at me right now. But, Brendan, I was going to ask you about Vlad Guerrero. He did play for the Rangers for a little bit. Do you think it's a good pick? I know also some players, Chipper Jones as well, and Jim Thome, who I like all those guys. But what do you feel about Vlad getting in?
I have a big love-hate relationship with Vladimir Guerrero because he was a Ranger killer his whole career in the Angels. I saw a stat the other day. He played over 100 games. He had a whole season's worth of stats. Just against the Rangers. He played over 100 games against them, hit over like 30 home runs and like 90 or 100 RBIs against them. But then in his 1 year at Texas, you know, we made the World Series run. He was he's a very clutch hitter. He tweeted about he appreciated his time in Texas, but, you know, because we helped get him to another World Series. He's a fun guy. He's one of the funnest hitters to ever watch because he'll swing and hit anything. I saw a video the other day. The ball bounced off the ground, and he still hit it.
I hope his son does the same thing. That'd be so good.
Yeah, so
Did you see that they gave his son an 80-rated hitting skill? 80 is like – so from a scouting perspective, it goes 20 to 80, right? 80 mm-hmm. being like unheard of elite. They gave him an 80 as hitting. That's not power. That's just hitting, pure contact skill. So apparently – it runs in the family. And I hope he does the same stuff, because, like, Vladimir Guerrero was one of the just most enjoyable guys to watch play baseball. He'd like you said, he'd swing at everything. If it was a mile ahead, he'd tomahawk.
That reminded me of Miguel Tejada, too. I mean, he would swing at everything when he was with the Astros for, like, a short time.
But very short time.
All those guys, they just have that aggressive nature about them. I was actually going to read, I promised the people I would read some Tim Duncan news. I kind of segue that. I was just going to say, Tim Duncan gets $7.5 million from ex-financial advisor in fraud settlement. It was reported by ESPN. It was basically he has agreed to accept $7.5 million from his lawsuit against former financial advisor he accused of milking him out of more than $20 million. So Tim Duncan kind of getting some redemption on that as well. I guess it's good news for Tim if he can get a little bit richer. I say go for it. I know the Spurs could probably use a healthy Tim Duncan right about now. But
I'll take it. I mean, if he wants to come back and play, I'm not going to argue at all. I mean, but to be fair, though, if he was over $20 million and only got 7.5 out of it, I think he still kind of lost, right?
Yeah.
He still lost out on a lot of money.
I think it comes to the point with law. I'm taking media law, and I know you've taken this class. It's just a very complicated process, suing people, and just some people just don't want to go through it.
I don't think he's losing sleep over it.
No, yeah. Probably not. He's made a lot more money than that throughout his career, so take it as it is, right?
But guys, I just wanted to let you guys have like a little bit of final thoughts before we do end up going off the show here. Reed, is there anything you want to talk about before we end this?
I know we've picked on Andrew a lot today, just a little bit. I want to do one last segment, and this is a completely a response to something he said on the latest Riding the Pine, where he said that the Houston Astros, well, he misworded it. He said winning 700 games in the past seven. He meant to say losing 700 games. For those of you who don't know Andrew Zimmel is a Minnesota Twins fan. And I went ahead and did some stats digging. If you're going to say that losing 700 games in 7 years is bad, since 2011, the Houston Astros have lost 631 games. Since 2011, the Minnesota Twins have lost 642 games. So I don't want to hear it telling me how mediocre my team was over the past 7 years when your team was worse. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. Brendan, any final words before we clear things off?
I'm going to hop back to the NBA All-Star game, talk about some players who shouldn't be All-Stars and some players who should be All-Stars. Get Draymond Green and Al Horford out of this All-Star game. They should not be in it. You tell me a guy who averages 13-5-8 is an All-Star. No, it's just because the Celtics are winning. Al Horford got put in. Sure, he's a solid center, but I do not see Al Horford as a five-time All-Star like he's listed right here. I think there are more deserving players. Andre Drummond had a case. Lou Williams has had a case. I saw someone talk about Goran Dragic having a case. Some of these, there were a lot more other players who was a little bit more deserving. I know they don't necessarily play the same mm-hmm. forward position, but there were still more deserving guys. I feel like some guys just get in because of the name. Draymond Green coming out as an All-Star. It's just because, you know, he puts that defensive impact and he's the defensive leader. He has the same stats as Lonzo Ball. So. Mm-hmm. You know, some of these guys just not as deserving. I wanted to see Lou Williams in there, who's, you know, carrying the team from coming off the Clippers bench. Blake Griffin missed too much season. Aaron Gordon had a real case to be an All-Star this year. You could have thrown him in there. So I don't agree with Draymond Green and Al Horford for being All-Stars.
I think the final thing for me, I kind of got it off my chest when I was talking about what makes good radio, so I think I'm pretty good. There was a few things I wanted to ramble on about, but I think it's actually pretty good to call it a quits for today. I appreciate you guys sticking with us. That was Reed Graff, Brendan Snow. That was the first edition of the Friday Show. I am Parker Ray, about to sign off on this one. You're listening to KTSW San Marcos.
Hi, this is Alicia from Bully, and you're listening to KTSW San Marcos. You're listening to KTSW News, your only